All right, how many of you have ever been stopped by a policeman? Okay, yeah, hands go up. And maybe you got a ticket for something, speeding. Your taillight was out, the policeman stopped you. Or just a parking ticket, maybe. You parked in the wrong place. And you got a ticket for parking in the wrong place.
Yeah, I was stopped by the police in front of your...
That's right. Oh. You were. Yes, I remember that. Yes.
Oh.
That's so funny.
Funny now. Man.
Okay, so let's say the policeman pulls you over for speeding, let's say. I'm just making it up right now. And he says to you, do you understand that you were going 70 miles per hour in a 55 mile per hour zone? And you respond with, officer, do you understand who I am? What is that policeman now thinking? He's not thinking good things. I'm just going to tell you that right now. He's not thinking real good things. From his perspective, he's thinking, who does this guy think he is? Does he think he's above the law? And I'm just going to tell you right now, if I were the policeman and someone did that to me, he's getting a ticket. He just is. He's getting a ticket. It's over with that comment. If I thought of being nice to him, I'm not being nice to him anymore. He's getting a ticket. John chapter 5. I'm going to read verses 1 through 18. It says, after this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem, by the sheep gate, a pool in Aramaic called Bethesda, which has five roofed colonnades. In these lay a multitude of invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. One man was there who had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been there a long time, he said to him, do you want to be healed? The sick man answered him, sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, and while I am going, another steps down before me. Jesus said to him, get up. Take up your bed and walk. And at once the man was healed, and he took up his bed and walked. Now that day was the Sabbath. So the Jews said to the man who had been healed, it is the Sabbath, and it is not lawful for you to take up your bed. But he answered them, the man who healed me, that man, said to me, take up your bed and walk. They asked him, who is the man who said to you, take up your bed and walk? Now the man who had been healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn, as there was a crowd in the place. Afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, see, you are well. Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you. The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had healed him. And this was why the Jews were persecuting Jesus, because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, my Father is working until now, and I am working. This was why the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him, because not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own father, making himself equal with God. Okay, let's review a bit. So in John chapter 3, Jesus went to Jerusalem. And so he's in Jerusalem in Judea, that's down in the south. And there he encountered Nicodemus, and he has the conversation with Nicodemus. And then afterwards, he moves out of Jerusalem over by the Jordan River, and they're baptizing in the Jordan River, and that's where John says he must increase and I must decrease. And then Jesus decides it's time to go up to Galilee. Galilee's in the north. And so they have to travel from the south, Judea, to the north, Galilee. And to make the trip, they have to walk through Samaria. And they walk through Samaria, and they meet the woman at the well. And she and the people of the town invite him to stay a couple days, which they do. And they see a lot of fruit in Samaria. They then go up north to Galilee. And that's in chapter 4. So Samaria is Judea and Jerusalem's chapter 3. Samaria is chapter 4. The very end of chapter 4, we get one story up in Galilee. And that's what we talked about last week. That's where he heals the son of a government official from the town of Capernaum. And the government official, Jesus was in a different town, Cana, which is, they're both towns in Galilee, up the north. And but Jesus heals that man's son. And chapter 5, verse 1. After these things, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. So he's back in Jerusalem. He didn't spend a whole lot of time in Galilee in John. He actually probably did spend a lot of time in Galilee. John just didn't record any of it. And so we don't know which feast this was. Doesn't say. It was sometime later. How much later? We don't know. But it's likely some time later. And so Jesus has been in Galilee for a time, but John, the author of the book, has chosen not to record whatever it was Jesus did up in Galilee. And this helps explain why the book of John is often so different from the books of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. John intentionally talks about, he gives a much more focus on Jesus' time in Jerusalem. Matthew, Mark, and Luke very plainly focus on Jesus' time in Galilee. And Galilee is not Jerusalem. Now, there's lots of overlap. He healed people in Galilee. He healed people in Jerusalem. But the stories are different. The story of this healing and the story of that healing, they're not the same kind of story. There's the same, it's healing. In that respect, it's the same. But they're different stories. And so that's partly why John is so different from the other three Gospels. They're actually talking about different stories and focusing on something a little bit different in Jesus' ministry and Jesus' life. Okay, so anyway, all that's just kind of to help you understand some of the gospel differences. Jesus goes to Jerusalem. So he goes to Jerusalem, and what happens? You tell me what happens in Jerusalem, briefly. Don't go on to a big, long thing. Briefly, what happens?
He went to the temple and saw...
Okay, he goes to the temple and...
He sees the opens the lid, and, you know, Jesus asks him, do you want to be healed?
Okay.
And then he says...
Yes, this is not in the temple, though, where that happens.
Oh, okay.
He does see him in the temple later.
Oh, this is the
pools at Bethesda, yes.
Right.
So he goes there, asks the man if he wants to be healed. Go ahead.
Correct. And then Jesus healed him by saying, okay, take up your mat and walk.
Yep.
So that probably tripped the Pharisees. And probably,
okay.
You know, and they were all about, well, you can't, you know, pull your ox out on the Sabbath because they thought it was work.
Okay, so he healed him on the Sabbath. That was a problem with him.
And then he says, basically he's saying, he also says, go and sin no more.
Yeah, there he's in the temple. He finds the man in the temple, and he says, go sin no more.
And then in 18, he's breaking the Sabbath, and then the Pharisees were thinking blasphemy.
Basically blasphemy, yes, that's what they're thinking.
He's making himself equal to God.
That's right.
God.
Okay, good. Okay, so Jesus did a lot of healings. Up in Galilee, down in Jerusalem, he did a lot of healings. We know that he did probably more healings that are not recorded than there were that were recorded. He healed lots of people. And the healing of this particular man in Jerusalem, in and of itself, does not really stand out over and above any other healing that Jesus did. It's just, it's another healing that Jesus did. But this healing has a very long conversation that follows it between Jesus and the Jewish leaders. And in fact, it's going to be the rest of chapter 5. And we're not even going to cover all of that tonight, because we don't have the time to cover all of that material. We're going to get into the introduction of the conversation, but there's a lot more conversation that's coming. But I think John chooses to include this healing because he wants to tell us about the conversation. And this healing introduces the conversation. And so it's really, from John's perspective, it's the conversation that's coming. That's not that the healing's unimportant, it's still important, but it's the conversation that's coming that's the big thing that he wants to really get at. And so that's why he's telling us about this. And so we get the story that of the invalid at the pools of Bethesda. And by the way, Bethesda and the pools here, you can go there today. Leanne and I have been there. And it's there aren't a lot of places that you can go to today where you can say for certain Jesus stood right there. This is one of those places that you can go to. And he stood. There's another one is the synagogue in Capernaum, which is, we have the ruins of the synagogue. We know Jesus taught in that synagogue. And so you could go stand in that synagogue. And you know, okay, Jesus stood in this building a long time ago. And so, okay, so now describe the man Jesus healed.
Invalid for 38 years.
Invalid for 38 years. That means he can't walk. He's paralyzed, if you want to use that word. For 38 years. It's been a long time. Okay? Anything else you want to tell me about the man?
He wants to be healed.
He wants to be healed.
And he said, no one put me in the pool.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
He tries to get to the pool. So he doesn't just lay there when the water is stirred up. He tries to get to the pool.
He wants to get in. That's right.
Goes ahead of him.
Okay. So Jesus heals him, and then the Jews have a big problem with it. And what's their big problem? We've already mentioned it once, but what's their big problem?
He's working on the Sabbath.
Okay, it's the Sabbath. They have a problem with the Sabbath. And, well, okay, so there are two different problems with the Sabbath. One is with the man who was healed. What is the problem they have with the man who was healed? What's he doing that they complain about?
Just laying on his mat, on the mat, because like you said, like he can't walk.
Well, that's not the problem the Jews have with him, though. What's the problem the Jews have with this man?
He was making himself equal with the Lord in that.
That's Jesus. I'm not talking about Jesus. What is the problem the Jews have with the man who was healed, the invalid who had been healed after 38 years? And the Jews are complaining. What's their complaint against him?
He took up his bed and was carrying it.
He is carrying his mat through Jerusalem.
On the Sabbath.
On the Sabbath. He's carrying something. You can't do that. That's against the law that they had. That's work. And you can't carry your mat. That's how they interpreted the Sabbath. And so that is their problem with this man. Okay, then they have a problem with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And their problem with Jesus is actually not that he healed on the Sabbath. It's what? What's their problem with Jesus?
Jesus was calling the Lord his Father.
Okay, yeah, later they have that problem. What's their first problem with Jesus? Before they even know who he is, before they even know his name, they have a problem with him. And what's their problem with him?
Because Jesus healed people on the Sabbath?
He heals the man on the Sabbath. Verse 12, the Jewish leaders want to know who it was that did what?
Who was the man who said to you, take up your bed and walk?
Okay, who told you to take up your bed and walk? That's their problem with Jesus. What? It's not that he healed on the Sabbath. Exactly. Well, they may have a problem with that, but that's not what John says. John is pointing out something different. John is saying they are bothered that somebody told you to pick up your mat and walk. Mm-hmm. To them, the man is breaking the Sabbath by carrying his mat. And it is one thing for someone to break the Sabbath. It is a far more serious offense for someone else to teach you to break the Sabbath. And Jesus is not just breaking the Sabbath. He is actually telling somebody to break the Sabbath. And that's actually worse than breaking the Sabbath. Because you're actually teaching people to do, in their view, what's evil. And so they already do not like Jesus. They don't even know his name here. In verse 12, they don't know who he is, but they do not like this guy. Who does he think he is telling you to break the Sabbath? And it's a very natural reaction that they have. Anybody in authority would have this same reaction. Okay, China. Let's say Communist Party leader in China. And somebody in China, he hears that somebody is teaching people that there is a God who is higher than the Communist Party. He doesn't know the guy's name. What does he think of the guy? He doesn't even know who he is. He's already opposed to that guy. And he doesn't even know who he is. Something like that. The Jewish leaders are that way. You know, you go to Muslim world. You have a Muslim cleric. And he hears that somebody has been telling the women they do not have to wear their hijab. That's the head covering. Or you don't have to pray your prayers. Okay, he doesn't know who the guy is, but he hears that's going on. He is already opposed to that guy. That it's that you could pick any situation, and this is just the natural reaction. When you have a law and somebody's telling you can, you know, you don't have to do that, you're already opposed to them. If you go against the established culture that you live in, the culture will oppose you. This is something we've talked about before. Okay, guys, as a Christian, you're going to go against your culture. You just are. And you know what? You will be opposed. And it's okay. It's okay for your culture to oppose you. It's okay for you to stand against it. Jesus was opposed too. And when your culture opposes you, you're kind of in the same, at least if they oppose you for godly, you know, reasons where you're doing something godly, you're in the same position Jesus was in. That's an okay position to be in. Opposition from this world is part of walking with Jesus. It's part of it. It's normal. So, in the story, Jesus then goes and he finds the healed man, the invalid that he healed. He finds him in the temple, and he says, verse 14, he says, "See, you are well. Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you." Now, I don't know what the thing that is worse is that Jesus is referring to. He could be referring to something. It's something worse than being an invalid for 38 years. That we know. It could be something physical. It could be hell that he's talking about, which certainly would be worse. But what Jesus is doing is he's connecting two ideas. One idea is sin. The other idea is suffering. And he's putting them together. And he's saying, at least in the case of this man here, this specific situation, those two ideas go together. Now, here's the thing. Later, in John chapter 9, which we've not gotten to yet, Jesus meets in Jerusalem again. He'll be in Jerusalem at the time. He meets the man born blind. And his disciples say to him, "Rabbi, who sinned that this man was born blind? Him or his parents?" And Jesus is going to say, "Neither one. But that the God may be glorified, that, you know, this man was born blind, that God would receive glory." Now, okay, to Jesus, apparently, sometimes specific sins produce specific suffering. And sometimes specific sins do not produce specific suffering. Some people suffer, and the reason for suffering isn't always some specific sin. It may be due to something else. But sometimes it actually is due to that. And this is something we need as Christians to, sort of the relationship between sin and suffering. We need to understand. Broadly speaking, generally speaking, they go together. All the time they go together, generally speaking. And the reason why is sin is what caused the fall of man. Sin is why this whole world is broken in the first place. Sin is what Adam did, and when Adam did that, the whole universe broke. And suffering is part of the brokenness. It's just part of living in this world. It does not mean you did some specific sin to because now you're sick or whatever. It doesn't mean that. It just means, but sin's still attached to it because sin caused the whole thing. But sometimes there's a specific connection for some people. I remember, y'all remember COVID, right? When COVID came out, there were people who said, COVID is God's judgment on our country because we're so wicked. There were people who said that. Yep. And then there were other people who said, no, it's not. God does not do that. And I remember thinking, on the one hand, to the people who said, no, God does not do that, I remember thinking, yes, he does. Have you read your Bible? I mean, how many times in the Old Testament do the people of Israel suffer because of their idolatry? How many times do they receive judgment because of their sin? Yes, God does that. And then you go to the New Testament, and you see it in the New Testament. If you think God doesn't do that, go ask Ananias and Sapphira if God does that. Or go ask the people that Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 11 who got sick and died because they did not take the communion seriously. Or in the New Testament, just read the book of Revelation. That is the book of the entire book. Is judgment for sin. Yeah, God does do that. But that does not mean that every calamity, every suffering is a result of some sin. It just doesn't mean that. It just means God does do that. And so we have these two, COVID comes, we have these two people, different groups talking. Oh, it's God's judgment. Oh, no, it's not. God doesn't do that. Yes, God does do that, but he doesn't do it all the time, and you say it's his judgment, and how do you know? And you don't really know. And both groups were going too far. Because God does still judge sin. But not every suffering is the result of a specific sin. And you need some special revelation from God to be able to actually say something on that specific event. Now, the point actually is not then for you and me to worry when you suffer. Oh, am I suffering because I sinned? You know, people do that all the time. You've probably done it. You know, you have some suffering and you're wondering, is it because I did this or because I did that? And I don't know. Maybe God will let you know. But let's say he doesn't. Most of the time, he won't let you know. I'm going to tell you that. Most of the time, he isn't going to tell you. But the point isn't for you to worry about it. Don't worry, did I sin to do this? Instead, do this. Just walk with God. It's really that simple. If you will just walk with God, you'll be doing what He wants. And let's suppose that your suffering is because of some sin. If you just walk with God, what that's going to do is you're going to start dealing with that sin. And you'll start changing. And so don't worry about that. Now, Jesus meets this man in the temple, and Jesus is calling this man to walk with God. He says to the man, stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you. And he's calling this man to walk with God because there is something much more important than your physical health. See, I want you to get the picture. Here's a man who could not walk for 38 years. And today, for the first time in 38 years, he's walking. Now, in that man's life, that is a huge event. That may be the most important event that happened in his life, that he is, from his perspective. That's how he's thinking, right? If you had not walked for 38 years and all of a sudden you could walk today, you are saying, this is big. Okay. And Jesus finds him. And he says, okay, you're well. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you. Jesus is calling him to something bigger than being able to walk. That's what he's calling him to. He's talking as if there's something more important than you being able to walk. And you and I, we need to hear that. We need to hear that there's something more important than this world. And the whatever the things you think are important here, and I'm not saying they're not important. It was important for the man to walk, by the way. I'm not trying to put that down. But there's something bigger. And sometimes we think that the most important thing is our health. Or that the most important thing is our job, or that the most important thing is fill in the blank. You've got, you know, there are lots of things that you could put there. And what happens is we neglect God because, well, I need to take care of my body, you know? And when you do that, guys, you're a fool. Your body is not more important than your soul. It's not. It's just not. There's some guy I've seen on the internet. I can't think of the guy's name. He's one of those guys who talks about real healthy living, and he wants to live forever. And he wants the human race to get to the point where we're so healthy in how we live and whatnot that we don't die. And I can't think of the guy's name. But there really is a guy out there that's talking this way and doing this. One day we humans will figure this out. Kind of that's his the thing that he's pursuing. Okay, now that guy's an extreme. I'm not trying to say he represents most people. I don't think he does. I think he's an extreme. But there are people who, while he's an extreme, there are people who will follow his principles of healthy living over a healthy soul. There lots of people do that. And there are people who will not spend time with God because they have other priorities. I don't have time, you know. I don't have time to read the Bible. I don't have time to pray. I don't have time to... They have their things that they are doing. Okay, well, why don't you have time? What is it that's more important than time with God that makes you say, whatever, you don't have time for God? You know, one day you're going to stand before God and he's going to say, what'd you do? And you're going to say, well, I didn't have time for you. I'm going to tell you something. That's not going to go well. You don't want to have that conversation with God. You don't want to say to God, I didn't have time for you because I was too busy earning money. Or whatever it happens to be. Whatever the issue is. Or, you know, I skip church because I got to sleep. Or I got to take care of myself, you know. This is like welcome to the human race. This is how the human race is. We have our priorities backwards. They don't fellowship. They won't spend time with God's people. I don't have time for that. Their focus is earth, not God. And that's, you know, back when we did Ecclesiastes and talked through the book of Ecclesiastes, that really was what that book is about. It's about your focus being on earth instead of God and how empty it is and the vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And it's this world, everything under the sun. You know, that was Ecclesiastes. Well, that's, people live Ecclesiastes every day. And they do it by making something else more important than God. And that's backwards. Jesus is calling this man to make God the most important thing. Make God his focus, not earth. Yeah, I know you can walk now, and that's great. Stop sinning, dude, or there's something worse going to happen to you. And Jesus calls you and me to the same thing. Listen to Jesus. Here's what he says. I'm just going to quote him. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul? That's Jesus. Here's more Jesus. He says, do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. That's what Jesus says. He's saying there's something more important than your body. There's something more important than gaining the whole world. Focus on that. If that's what the most important thing is, well, make that the most important thing in your life. Make God your priority. That's the idea. That is something Jesus is calling you to. I guarantee it. He's calling you to make God your priority. And Jesus has the authority to call you to that. And his answer to the Jews shows this. So he finds the man in the temple. He tells him to stop sinning or something worse will happen. The man now knows who it is. He didn't know who healed him. Now he knows who healed him. And he runs to the Jews and says, hey, that man that healed me, his name was Jesus. Okay, so then the Jews find Jesus and they have a conversation. And it says that the Jews were persecuting him because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. That's verse 16. And Jesus answered them. And he says, My Father is working until now, and I am working. Now, to you and me today, we're 2,000 years removed from this scene. And we're in a totally different cultures, because we represent different cultures here. But every culture here is totally different from the Jewish culture in the first century that Jesus is in. And so this Jesus' answer to you and me might sound a little bit cryptic, mysterious. Cryptic means mysterious. It might be kind of a mysterious answer. What's he mean by that? That's kind of, I don't get it, you know? But here's what's going on. And so I'm going to take you back to first century Jewish culture for a moment. Jewish scholars in Jesus' day and before Jesus' day, and actually after Jesus' day, it was a long-running discussion on this topic. Jewish scholars had this long-running, ongoing discussion amongst themselves over this question. Here's the question. Does God keep the Sabbath? And they asked that question because, well, the Sabbath is God's law. So does God keep his own law? And if he does, and he does no work on the Sabbath, who is upholding the universe? Who is, and there are all these questions that are going on, right? This is a well-known debate in their day that's going on. So if God is resting and doing absolutely nothing on the Sabbath, like, can you even pray to him on the Sabbath? You see the question and the debate that they had. Okay, this debate is going on. The Jewish scholars were all unanimous in the answer. Now, they had different explanations of how they came to their answer, but everybody agreed. And here's what they agreed on. Yes, God works on the Sabbath. They agreed that he does. And they had different explanations for how, okay, if God is working on the Sabbath, then how does that mean how can he keep his law? It's his law. And how can he keep, anyway, we're not going into the debates there, but you need to understand that all the Jews that Jesus is talking to are well aware of this. Yes, God is working. And not only would they say God is working, but they would say that for the norm, only God can do this. Apart from emergencies. They made exceptions for emergencies, which you see in other, and like the priest working in the temple, you know. And Jesus actually refers to this in the other Gospels. You know, he's accused of healing on the Sabbath, and he says, which of you who has a sheep who falls into a pit on the Sabbath will not go and take him out? And so they made allowances for that. But for the norm, a man cannot violate the Sabbath. He has to have a special reason. And here, Jesus' answer, he's not giving them a special reason. So here we are. The Jewish leaders are complaining that Jesus is telling people to work on the Sabbath and that he is working on the Sabbath. And his answer is not some special case. His answer is, my Father is working, and I am too. And what he's saying is, I have the same authority to work on the Sabbath as my Father does. I have the same authority to work on the Sabbath as God does. And the Jewish leaders understand full well what that means, what he's saying. They know what he's saying. And the text then says, and now they want all the more to kill him. Because God his Father and made himself equal to God. Jesus' answer made them angry. They were already opposed to what he was doing. But when they confronted him and he gave them that answer, they are furious now. Because they know what he's saying. They know that whole debate. They know who is it who can work on the Sabbath. And Jesus knows the whole debate too. And he's identifying himself with the one who can work on the Sabbath. Okay, now, it's as if the Jewish leaders were the policemen who just stopped Jesus for breaking the law. And Jesus just said, officer, do you understand who I am? He just said that to them. And now, I told you, if I were the policeman, he's getting a ticket, right? If you were the policeman, he's probably getting a ticket too. Because you don't talk that way to them about that. Jesus is saying, I'm higher than the law. That's what he's saying to them. He is claiming authority over the Sabbath. He's saying, I am greater than the law God gave. I mean, chew on that for a minute. If some normal guy said that to you, what would you think of him? If somebody just came up to you and, you know, you get to talking about God's law, and this guy starts talking as if, I'm above God's law. What do you think of that guy?
He's being proud and arrogant.
Okay, you're thinking he's arrogant?
He is crazy.
Or he's crazy. Those are kind of your two options, right? He's either arrogant or he's crazy. In fact, I think he might be both. Arrogant and crazy. That's what you're thinking. Okay, Jesus has just made that kind of claim. And so here are your choices. Either Jesus is telling the truth or he's not telling the truth. If Jesus is telling the truth, he's God. If Jesus is not telling the truth, he is either satanic or crazy. Those are your options. You really don't have any other options. And so, you know, this is like C.S. Lewis presented this dilemma. He calls it a trilemma because you get three options. Jesus is either Lord, or Jesus is a liar, or Jesus is a lunatic. Lunatic is a crazy man. And those are your three. This idea that Jesus is just a good teacher doesn't work. Because good teachers don't talk the way Jesus just talked. If you encountered somebody who said what Jesus just said, you would not say, oh, he's a good teacher. That's about the last thing you would say about him. You would say he's crazy, not a good teacher. The only way Jesus could actually be a good teacher is if he's telling the truth. If he is telling the truth, then, yeah, okay, he can be a good teacher, but if he's telling the truth, he's a lot more than a good teacher. He's not just a good teacher. He's something you're going to have to wrap your head around that. Now, listen to John. John, the writer of this book. Here's what he says. John chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. And the Word was with God in the beginning. Everything was made by Him. And there was nothing that has been made that He did not make. In him was light, and that light was the life of men. And then you skip down to verse 14. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. He's saying that the Word was God, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. John is saying this. It's his introduction to the whole book. Okay, now here's what we've got. My Father is working on the Sabbath, and I am working too. Those things go together, guys. Those are different parts of John's message, and yet it's the same message. What it means is that you and I have to deal with a Jesus who has the authority of God. It means Jesus is Lord. It means you are not Lord. It means that when Jesus interprets Scripture, you need to listen to what he says. It means Jesus gets to tell you what to do. It means Jesus is higher than any other man. And that includes all of the rulers of every country represented here. Jesus is higher than Donald Trump. Much higher. Jesus, and we need to see this, you know, and the rulers of your countries. It means your primary allegiance needs to be Jesus. It means that Jesus needs to be more important to you than your bank account. He needs to be more important to you than your work and your job and your family. Jesus claims that right because of who he is. That's why he claims that right. And this is what sets Christianity apart from every other religion. In Christianity, God came to earth. He took on the form of a man. And he took on the form of a man so that he could die as a man. And when he died as a man, he died for you. And he died for me. We call this the love of God. He loved you. That's why he died for you. In Christianity, the Jesus is a picture of love like no other religion has. There is no religion that even comes close to anything like this. So then, get to know him. Walk with him. We talked about walking with God earlier. Walking with God means walking with Jesus. Start walking with him. So then, what is it that you need to do to walk with Jesus better? Well, how do you use your time? Think about how you use your time. And where can you create more time for Jesus in your schedule? And maybe some things need to go so that you can have more time for him. Maybe you need to obey him in baptism. He wants you to be baptized if you are a Christian. And if that's not happened yet, maybe that needs to happen. maybe you need to share your faith with some people. There are people who need to hear about Jesus. And maybe you know some of them. And, well, tell them. Maybe you need time each day for him. Maybe less social media, more Bible. You know, not so much time on Facebook. But more time in the Gospels. I want you to ask God what it looks like for you to walk better with Jesus. What does it look like in your world for you? And to honor him. Because it's Jesus you must honor. I'm just going to pray. Father, I ask that you make us men and women who do walk with Jesus well. And I pray for each of my brothers and sisters here that you would speak to their hearts about what that looks like in their life. What do they need to change to walk with Jesus better? And I pray the same prayer for me, that I would change to walk with you better. We want you, Jesus. We want you. I pray that over each of my brothers and sisters here. I thank you that you love us. I thank you that you will be faithful to work your will in us. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.